You're listening to the USEA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USEA eventing news. Welcome to the USEA official podcast, episode 252. And we have a full team for you today, listeners. I am going to start by saying hello to my very good friend, Dan Byrne. How is sunny Ireland?
Grand, all good in Ireland. Looking forward to the show, Nicole.
Good. We have got lots to talk about and we've got some big names to discuss as well, because there's been a lot of advanced horse trials going on. We have Red Hills coming up. There are plenty of eventing showcases too. Max, I'm going to say hello to you next. How is everything with you, life after the USEA symposium?
It's very good. Very good. Just, on to the next, gearing up for the next adventure. But everything's well here in sunny Florida.
Good. It does feel a little bit like that, doesn't it? The start of the season comes and you get one and then the next comes and then you literally just roll from one to the next and it just keeps on coming. Rob, good to have you with us as well. We have a full team, as I say, and looking forward to it.
Thank you. Looking forward to it as well.
Now, before we go in to talking about a few of those recent results, I wanted to talk to you about the USEA symposium. Andreas Dabowski was the lead speaker this year, Max. And did he bring any German secrets over to the US?
I don't know if he necessarily brought German secrets, but he just for sure brought a different style of teaching and a different sort of, I don't know what the right word is for, a different way to look at things. And it was kept it, I feel that the German way is just very straightforward about horses going forward, always moving forward, and kept it fairly simple. I thought he was very different from the people we've had in the past, which I think is fantastic. Just gave people a whole nother perspective.
It's always good, isn't it, to get different ideas and see different ways of doing things, and you pick up different little snippets that you think, actually, that I could really, really use that in sort of my, that would work for me. So it's always nice on that. Rob, you've been to the symposium before. How was it in 2020 for you?
Yeah, I think it keeps getting better every year. It's actually been a couple of years since I last went, but like Max said, I think we've done a good job of bringing in kind of a keynote presenter, speaker, clinician every year, and they all come from each from a unique perspective, and I think the symposium gets cleaner, more professional every year. You know, a big shout out to our staff and the volunteer leaders like who've all been involved, from Phyllis Dawson to Robin Walker to Marilyn Payne, Tim Holcamp, Susan Graham White. They've all like put their heart and soul into making it better every year. So I think it was really well received, great attendance. We had, anywhere from about 30 folks on the lowest at the lowest point to about 100 folks at the highest.
Good. Have you started plans for next year? Have you got some ideas for what could be in store for 2021?
We do, and we have kind of our top list of folks we want to bring in, one of which is a Brit. So we'll see what happens. We haven't had any commitment, so yeah. I don't want to make
any name names.
Not yet, no.
I'll get it out of you at some point, Rob. It's exciting, though, isn't it? Because it brings, as you say, it's good to see different levels of training, different people's ideas, and actually everybody has things that work for them. And it's nice to be able to bring that over to US eventing as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, now what we wanted to talk about on this episode is we have got quite a lot of the big hitters out and about, early start to the season, building up for Kentucky. So we wanted to look back at a few of the events that have been so far, because we've had some exciting horses out and about competing already, and look forward to the first four-star short of the season as well at Red Hills next weekend. So we're going to start by reviewing some of the competition thus far. And there is one horse that I am unbelievably excited about. I was very excited about them beforehand, and this has just solidified it for me. She is a 9-year-old mare, goes by the name of Star Witness, was fourth individually at the Pan American Games, and helped the US to team gold, and obviously that important qualifying ticket for the Olympic Games this year. Doug Payne's Star Witness. Now, Dermot, this is a horse that actually stepped up at Pinetop in her first advanced and took away the win.
Yeah, this horse is going to be a star, literally, I suppose. But they've been putting together the type of record for a while. We've been flagging them up for a while. And, you know, when you look at, I suppose you look at Van Diver at the top of Doug String and you think, you know, has a shot here at Tokyo. We've seen him perform really well at Kentucky. When you're building a string like this, you know, having backup like Star Witness coming through is something really exciting. And everything is suggesting from the profile that I think they've got everything that they're going to need to perform at the top end of big internationals anywhere in the world. You're looking at the dressage score is coming down and down. I think last year, yeah, so 28 at Lima, 25.5 at Maryland. Is that right, guys? I'm really nervous about that. That's one of the words that tricks me.
About this name.
I say Maryland.
You did a great Maryland. Job.
Yeah, you got it. You got it.
Maryland. Yeah, I've had to practice that one. So Maryland, 25.5. Again, that's three stars short. But we're looking at low dressage scores, and we'll be talking about it, I'm sure, as we come to some of our previews. But those type of dressage scores are always going to keep you very competitive. But what's really exciting here is they haven't knocked a pole in international competition. They knocked two poles in their very first one. And since that, they've had, seven clears or six clears in a row. Pretty fast. And when you can put all of that together, I think Star Witness is just going to be a name that we're going to see again and again and again at the top of some of the big US competitions and some of the competitions around the world over the next 5 or 6 years.
I've got a little cheat. So I drove Doug's mom to the airport after the symposium, and Marilyn Payne was telling me that actually, with regards to, you brought up Lima, I think Doug could have made time at Lima, but he was going for a steady round for the team. And his Marilyn was talking about how Doug had this great line figured out. It was going to cut off time. It was going to be really clever, and everybody was going to be amazed by it. But you know, I think both he and Eric said, all right, we'll take it safe and get the full penalty.
Yeah. Team riders like that, they rub.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you're right. I think he's going to keep showing up.
Yeah, and he did, as you say, he made the time in Jersey Fresh when he won the three-star long last year on a 30.1 dressage. That dressage, the last two internationals, has been better. And then, you know, we're just coming off the back of an advanced last season, that, you know, 23-yard dressage score. So certainly looks like he has everything.
One horse as well. I mean, we're talking really about future horses for team selection. If we're looking in a couple of years' time at the World Games, or even in another 4 years' time for the Paris Olympic Games in 2024, Liz Halliday-Sharp won the other section for the second year in a row, actually. Cooley Quicksilver, who is a horse that I've been a fan of for a little while. And the thing that really stands out for me with their performance here is a real improvement in the horse's dressage. So 24 in the first phase, and she was really, really classy in the other two phases as well. Picked up a couple of cross-country time faults, but actually nobody in the advanced sections made the time. So the time was tough, so I'm not too worried about that. But 24.8 for Cooley Quicksilver is a very, very good starting score. And if you think, Max, in a couple of years' time or 4 years' time, you know, we're talking about a couple of horses here and riders on board that could be really pushing for team selection as well. So the future is very bright.
Absolutely. And Liz has, I've done some freelance work for her, and she's got a really incredible eclectic group of horses that are all very, very different, but all superstars. She's very, has put together a really good program of horses that are some that are right now at the two-star level, some that are the three-star level, some that are at the four-star level, and she sort of has three at each level. And like I said, all very different, but all really good athletes, and she's just taking her time producing them. So I would for sure be looking for her in the future to be there every single time.
Yeah, and Danero Z actually is a good shot for her for this year,
absolutely.
I imagine, heading to Kentucky. So they had top 15 at Burley last year. They came over to a very, very tough Burley horse trials in the UK and were very impressive. So it's good to see strength in depth in a couple of those riders' yards. Now, if we turn our attentions to Rocky
Wait,
horse,
Nicole. Wait, oh, Nicole. Don't turn then. Your attentions anywhere else. I found your horse.
Go on,
find
then.
Your horse. Now you're obviously going to say, "Oh, there's an Irish connection here, and that's why I'm picking this horse." But actually, I think there's one sitting out there who is actually in the other advanced section. So back to Doug Payne, Star Witness, that advanced section. Tim Burke came second in that on quality time, and interestingly, that's not even the Irish angle I'm going to pick. Actually, it's Kylie Lyman and Da Vinci Code. I think there is something here that we just have to keep an eye on. Dressage score of 29.6. They were the second fastest time of the day. They did knock two poles, and actually it was really, really expensive in this class because I think only one other person knocked two poles. Everyone else was clear. There was a lot of clear show jumping rounds or clear stadium jumping rounds here. So those two poles were really expensive, but this is your winner of the 3-star long format in Bromont last year. Now, they did a 28.3 at Bromont when they went on to win, finished on it. Now, at Carolina last year, they were eliminated and they started on a 39.9. I'm almost want to just write that off because it's kind of just seems too bad to be true in terms of where this horse looks like they're trending. Da Vinci Code looks like they have got the ability to make the time. They're not normally a horse that's going to knock poles like that, and we're starting to see those low dressage scores. I think coming third here on the second fastest time in the class and being able to produce that level of dressage, I am expecting to see Kylie Lyman out again and putting up some performances over the course of the year. I do expect we'll see Da Vinci Code's name there.
Oh, if we're going for one more, I'm going to take your original, or what I thought was your original Irish angle, Tim Burke's quality time. Now, actually, I've just gone into this horse's record because this was a horse that pre-Carolina last year flagged up on my radar because they had 6 international runs, admittedly the level below, so up to sort of 3-star level. And they had been clear and inside the time cross country on every single one of those runs. They went to Carolina for their first 4-star last year, 1 second over the time. This is obviously a mare that I know Tim thinks a massive amount of. She is very much going to be making her mark at advanced 4-star level this year. And I really, really like them a lot. So yeah, I think that's a 9-year-old to look out for this year. There's a few young guns actually on the scene that I think you can keep a lookout for, listeners, because they are going to be the stars of the future.
I have a final fact. I mean, we're never going to get through Pine Top if we keep going through this. We'll never get through the whole show. But just so you know, I love these little pieces of trivia. In the Back to Liz Halliday, I know I'm jumping around here, but Back to Liz Halliday, Cooley Quicksilver's advanced, the second, the other advanced last there. I see Louis M was in the field now with Alexa Gartenberg. Now, just worth noting, in case anyone ever misses it, and you're standing at the side of an arena, you are looking at the horse with the best international dressage score in the last 10 years. And probably beyond. When Louis M was with Pia Munker, they did a 13.7 dressage test at the 3-star short in Cruyff. That was in Germany back in 2015. Not only that, Louis M, of course, I mentioned, was with Pia, was with Cornelia Dore. They actually managed, Louis M, over the course of his record, he managed to get 20 sub-26 dressage tests in a row, which I think only Senior Medicot has equaled. But Louis M did it first. So it was sub 40 back in the day. It's now sub 26 and he did 20 of them consecutively. So an incredible dressage horse. He did another big test here, 26.6. But if you ever get the chance, now with Alexa Gartenberg, Louis M, one of the top first place performers that we'll see in the sport.
And listeners, if you've ever listened to the Eventing podcast, you will know that Dom loves Louis M. Like, he has a proper soft spot for Louis M, has followed him throughout his entire career, has championed him throughout it. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of that combination in 2020. Dee, am I allowed to move on to Rocking Horse? Or no, Rob?
I have
Rob,
one. I have one.
Go on, then.
So you covered all these great horses, and you totally left out Mixmaster C, who came in fifth in that tight advanced A division, who has had only one cross-country refusal in its entire career. And the horse is an American-bred young horse. It's a horse of the future. I'm sorry, I keep an eye on it, period.
There we go. That's Maya Black, isn't it? Is it Maya Black?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
They're getting better and better every time.
This is great. It's just going to turn into Ireland against the US on all these reviews. And I'll give you another one to keep an eye on.
Your last selection. Right, I'm going to take control and move on. Move on to Rocking Horse. Now, actually, listeners, if you listen to our last episode, you will know that Buck Davidson actually snuck off to talk to us on that episode about Carlivo's very good second place finish in Wellington in between phases. And Carlivo was one of the horses he was riding at Rocking Horse. And he actually took the win in one of the advanced sections. In fact, Buck took a 1-2 because Errol Gobi came in second. So he had a great result there and a fourth place finish in the same section because Copper Beach is back and in fourth as well. So he had a cracking Rocking Horse. Obviously, we didn't interrupt his dressage warm-up too much. But the one I want to talk about first off is actually a Canadian combination who topped the list in advanced section A, which was Lisa Marie Ferguson, Honor Me. Now, the reason I want to talk about them is because Canada are going to be out in force at Red Hills. And the recent individual quota for the Olympic Games has been confirmed. And Canada have two individual slots, which it means it's going to be tough, Max. And every single Canadian result now is going to make a real difference for those riders fighting for selection to go to Tokyo.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they have to continue to prove that they can do all three phases. Those individual spots will be quite coveted. And quite honestly, they've got, it's disappointing that they don't have a team because, well, in the end, they're only going to send one extra person if they had a team. So there you go. You know, they've got a lot of horses that are sort of coming up, a lot of riders that are coming up through the ranks and, you know, a pretty solid group of horses and riders. So it's going to be very, very, every rail is going to be very expensive. Every, you know, dressage mark is going to be very expensive for them. They've just come out, I think, pretty sure they've just come out with their, what they call their high performance list and then their second tier list. They've just come out with that. So, that's sort of, giving people motivation to crack on.
Ali Knowles had a couple of great results, Miss Poppins and Business Class. Business Class, a horse I'm really, really fond of, actually finished in the other two podium positions as well. Anybody else that we want to talk about from a Rocking Horse before we go on to Fresno?
I'd give Jenny Brannigan a shout out. I think she had quite a performance. Intermediate, she won it on FE Freestyle, and BT jumped a gun. Again, a little Irish connection there. BT is Camilla Spears' hometown, so that's Burrtown. So when you see BT in front of a lot of the international horses, you know they've come through there. So BT jumped a gun, came third in that intermediate. Twilight's Last Gem was fifth in the other intermediate. And then Bliss, the third, won the other intermediate, and she had another horse.
That is a horse for sure to keep an eye on with Jenny riding it, because that's a very special horse.
I think we're going to see them at Red Hills as well. Yeah,
it is a lovely, lovely horse that belongs to one of her students, and it's just coming back off of a injury, and they've taken their time bringing it back, and it's a very special horse. So with Jenny riding it, it'll be very interesting to see. It's fast. It does all three phases very well. So it will be really exciting to see where Jenny can take it.
There we go, listeners. One for you to keep an eye on. Now, as we go on to the last event that we are going to review from this spring in the last couple of weeks, I have actually caught up with a very special guest. Now, it is a lady who was back at Fresno Park with none other than her five-star campaigner. It is Frankie Theriot-Stutes, and Chatwin is back. Frankie, delighted to see it, because he was in excellent form at Fresno.
Yeah, he felt like himself again. It was really good to get him out. You know, a few people were into me about why I was doing the preliminary, and I said, well, look, my horse and I both haven't actually, you know, gone cross country in 8 months because of how it all played out with him getting sick, and then we just did a combined test to finish out our year and then took him home and let him just kind of get healthy again. And it was the end of the year, so as you know, the cards played, that's how it fell, and it felt really good to just have him out and have a canter around and you know, have no pressure and just have fun with him. Remember why we did this in the first place. So
he was in exceptional form. He led the dressage by something like 8 marks or something. He scored a 25 5?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, it's the beginning of the year, so the preliminary test is actually in a short court, which I'm not sure if I've ever ridden him in a short court, maybe, you know, 6 or 7 years ago when he was going training level. So it was for us. I'm like, man, this is real tight in here. But he was good. He's such a workman. And it was funny, you know, the day before he was a bit rogue and happy to be at a show and was on him. And I thought, man, good thing we just have a preliminary test to do tomorrow. But he's such a workman, like I said, and he comes out on the day ready to, you know, do his test. And it's funny, kind of over the years, as you get to know a horse as well as I know him, I can almost tell you how our test will be when I swing my leg over in the barn aisle based on how he is that day in a stall. And
really?
You know, you can just tell his mental game from so early on when you get on in the ride. And he takes his job very seriously. And so it's funny, at Fresno, I thought, are you going to be wild today? I haven't been out so long. And on the day, I put my leg over and he put his head down and said, you know, this is serious business. So
off
I had to kind of say, it's okay, boy, just a prelim test.
But, you're all right.
But over the years, I've learned to work with him when he doesn't show up with his A game. But, you know, I'm tilted a bit. But he definitely is so, when you know a horse as well as I know him, you kind of can really interpret how they're coming out from a mental standpoint, which is nice.
Can I ask, because obviously when he did get sick last year, he'd been top 5 at Le Moulin, he'd had a great result there. And then actually it got to the point where you very nearly lost him, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I just felt chills when you said that because we were so close to losing him. And I kind of thought, you know, after I got him back from the hospital and he seemed to do well and came out at the combined test and got, you know, in the low 20s, in the advance and then continued to be really fantastic and show jumped clean, that he was back on track, even though he wasn't quite ready to gallop yet. And after taking him home and really knowing him as well as I do again, it was clear he still was feeling pretty horrible. But is such a workman that he just was doing whatever I'd asked of him, kind of based on our partnership. And so, you know, the plan was to keep him in work after twin and build him back up for this year. And I actually gave him 6 to 8 weeks off because I could tell systemically he just still wasn't right and wanted to do right by him. So it's been a much longer process actually than I interpreted it that it would be. And he's still like early in this year was dealing with some gut stuff and some, you know, GI problems and stuff. So we have a wonderful team of internal medicine doctors and stuff that have helped him. And I would say actually, in the last couple of weeks, he's just starting to feel like himself again. So, you know, I am hoping I'm right and that we're putting that behind us now, but it's been a much more kind of emotional roller coaster and a much longer journey than anticipated initially with him because, you know, I just kind of thought we're out of the hospital or in the clear and it's been so much more than that. But happy to have him back, really happy with how he's been the last few weeks and really, really thankful for the team of supporters in our Chatwin group that are behind us because, you know, they all kind of signed on after Lemuelin and then he didn't really go to a horse show. So, but, you know, I desperately needed that financial help for his vet stuff and it has allowed me to make every decision without worrying about the cost with his best interest for his health. So
it fairly emotional run back at Fresno? Was it, did you sort of almost feel a bit like, oh, do you know what, actually it's been a fairly tough road to get here?
Yeah, I actually, he'd been having kind of some allergy stuff still up north, so I'd gone down to Palm Springs to do a really fun outdoor event where we did demos, Tammy and I, for the USCS, and I actually left him south and just said, hey, you know, it pays off to have a best friend who can ride like Tammy can and whose girls can care for horses like her incredible team can. And I said, hey, I need to leave Chatwin down here for a couple of weeks just to reset myself mentally and also, you know, let him kind of be out of his element to know that he is feeling better because he was starting to experience almost some anxiety around where he lived up north and I'd get ready to get on and he'd almost get anxiety breathing wise about having to work because you would do whatever I asked. So we kind of use that as a mental reset. So I actually flew from meetings in Florida straight down south to get him, and had a few days with him before Fresno. So going into Fresno, it was emotional to have him back, but more than anything, just, you know, just getting he and I on the same page. It, 2 weeks doesn't seem like a long time, but when you have a horse that lives at your house and you're the only one doing his care, it actually is kind of a long time.
Yeah. So,
and it was, you know, I just wanted him and I'd have a really fun experience back after everything we've been through. So my kids came and they hadn't been to a show in a while, and we had a lemonade stand, and, you know, they walked around on Chatwin half the time. And it was just fun to kind of have be a family affair and a weekend where, you know, leading up to Kentucky, obviously the stakes are pretty high this year. So it was really good to have a weekend where, you know, it didn't matter and I could canter about and my kids were there and we just could kind of reestablish the reasons why I do this and how special our partnership is and how much a part our family Chatwin is. So, you know, I think for me, Fresno was kind of just about, like, you know, reestablishing all those things that make us tick, because we're a little different than the average combination, and that, you know, he's a part of our family too. Okay.
In terms of what next for Chatwin?
Yeah.
Plan A
is definitely Kentucky. We, you know, he came home with me back after Fresno, and it seems like things are, that we're in a good place. We went and visited our dressage trainer, Lila Four, and, you know, have done some work there, and our jump trainer, Ned Glenn, and Eric Suzander came and was just here at my house for a few days training us before we came here to Twin. So, you know, we're here and we did a few practice tests today and got to run through the Kentucky test, which was nice to do, and, you know, start thinking about how you can squeeze off or get every little point you can. That's been good. And, you know, I'm just looking to have a good weekend back at the Blue Numbers and hoping we can do that this weekend. And then we'll plan to go to Galway in about a month's time. And then usually before big events, I back him down a level and make him run slow despite his want to not do that out of the box. And then we'll head to the Bluegrass Straight. So I'm going to see if I can even get him on the plane this time. I've tried now twice in the last year. And, you know, one of the times he kind of faked an injury and then rerouted to Lemelin. And the second time we tried to get AC, he almost died. So, you know, we're going to start calling it for his sake, like Tulum, Mexico or something, because he seems
tell him he's going back to Lemelin.
Exactly. We're going
to he liked it in Lemelin.
So get on the plane, and if we can get on the plane, that'll be half the battle. So, you know, this time of year, it's such an exciting time of year, especially in an Olympic year like this. But I think for me, it's also important to remember why you're doing this and take it one step at a time. And when you've dealt with health issues and the things you've had to overcome in the last 6 months, which have been pretty unbelievable, really, in dealing with them on a day-to-day basis with him, I think, you know, it gives you an appreciation for what we're asking these horses to do and how special they are. And so I'm kind of headed into this season with a higher gratitude than ever to have him and to hopefully, you know, be able to do some good things.
Well, good luck. And it'll be great to have Chatwin back out competing. We'll be watching your progress this spring. Looking forward to seeing how it goes. But Frankie, thank you so much for coming on to talk to us on the USEA podcast.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for doing this and helping to promote our sport.
Oh, thank you very much, Frankie. Back to the team now. Rob, you're a big fan of West Coast Eventing, and it's good to have Chatwin back.
Yeah, we're obviously really excited for Chatwin's future, and they're a spectacular team. After their Fairhill win, was it, gosh, was that last year? Or was that the
year? No, 2 years ago.
Oh, my
God. Yeah. See, time's flying by quick, but you know, I know, you know, they had that great performance over Lemuel, and then can't wait to see where they go. But, you know, I think the big news there at Fresno was James Allison just kind of cleaned up.
He did. He had a great result. He won the open prelim. He won the 3-star short with Lily as well. Good start to his season of being full of form.
Yeah, and there's a couple other names that I'd point out. Alexi Helfrich is another one, a French-American rider who is a little less known on this side of the country. But when I looked at his stats, I think mid last year, he's got a spectacular kind of top 10 finish percentage and a top five finish percentage, and has a great, I think one of the cross-country champs around the U.S. these days is Ryan Wood, who continually comes in clean on cross-country. Well, I think Alexi, one of these days, is going to be competing with Ryan for kind of that 100% mark of clear rounds. So there's also a lot of really promising young riders out there, Meg Pellegrini to name one. But now I think the future looks bright. And even one kind of really neat, heartwarming story is Taylor McFall, who's kind of, I don't know if those of us in the States are really familiar with Jen and Earl McFall on the West Coast, and Jen's horse High Times, who she competed at Kentucky and a lot of other places. But Taylor has taken on that ride and thriving with her first place win there in the preliminary rider division, first for the year.
I think Taylor stole all of our hearts when she was going around and offering to clean tack and mucking stalls and doing all that to help pay for her pony when she was first starting to compete. She would go around and try to raise money to help pay for her entries, which I thought was such a great life lesson. And her parents were behind her 150%, and so were all the competitors. So she's been hungry for this for a while.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we bought about $1,000 worth of horse treats from Taylor that year.
Exactly.
It's always nice, though, isn't it, when there's a story and when people are so desperate to do well and they'll do anything to do well. It makes a real kind of you feel invested in their story as well. And a lot of people get really quite behind them. And actually, that's really heartwarming in events, and we see it quite often. We'll be watching their progress for this year. Now, if we go on to Max, before we actually talk about Red Hills, there's a number of horses that we've already mentioned, Cooley Quicksilver being one with Liz Halliday-Sharp, at Foxwood High, Selena O'Hanlon, I think, are coming to your invitational events as a bit of a warm-up for Red Hills as well.
Yes. Yep. We've got a great show that we have been putting on here. This is the seventh year running the Eventing Pre-Invitational, and it started, we started it a while ago. My other half is a show jumper and was an eventer, and he was coaching some of the event riders and with the new format, with the show jumping always being mostly being before the cross country, he found it odd that people never got a chance to practice their show jumping under pressure when it really counted. Going to the jumping shows is one thing, but you never get you never really have it in your mindset that you have to be clear and you're going for money. So we created this show about 7 years ago, and we put it on the Tuesday before Red Hills because Red Hills is the first big international with lots of atmosphere. It's kind of a fun, becomes a fun afternoon. We've got meter 30 class. Chris Bernard's doing the show jumping designing. He's doing the course design, and we've got some great horse and riders coming, so it should be good. It's always competitive. $20,000 of prize money.
Oh, amazing! Who won it last year, Max?
Last year, actually, the last 2 years running, Will Coleman has been the winner. 2 years ago, he won on Gideon, and last year he was the winner on TKS Cooley. So he is back again with TKS Cooley. So it'll be interesting to see if he's going to be able to do a three-peat.
Will he get the hat trick? Actually, Will Coleman is one of those riders that we will hopefully have on the USEA podcast in the coming weeks. So stay tuned for that. But he's been in very good form as well. The list of horses in this lineup is quite incredible. You've got the likes of Joe Meyer with his long-term campaigner Clip Clop. You've got Jess Phoenix. The Canadians actually are out in force class. Carl Slezak, get my words out. Fernhill Wishes, he's got an entry. Ali Knowles, Miss Poppins, who had that great runner-up result in the advance that we just talked about. Errol Gobi, Buck Davidson. There's a whole list of very, very good names, including a number that are going, as you say, to Red Hills for the big event there. Now, let's talk about a few of the key contenders. But before we do, just a bit of background on Red Hills. So it's the winners of this class, Derm, have been quite remarkable. The likes of Boyd Martin, Lauren Nicholson Kiefer, as she was then, Philip Dutton, Hannah Sue Burnett, Marilyn Little, Selena O'Hanlon, and actually the last three winners in Hannah Sue Burnett, who rode Harbour Pilot to win in 2017. Marilyn Little won in 2018 with RF Scandalous. And Selena O'Hanlon, who are one of your favourites, Foxwood High, won last year. All three of those are back to try and take the title again in 2020.
Yeah, it's going to be unreal. We're talking about the four-star short now because, of course, there's multiple classes here. Yeah, I think just looking at the four-star short for a minute, I mean, you've named those last three winners, all big names, all names that we see, you know, championship level. What I would say is quite interesting when you look at the profile of how this tends to work out. Every event is different. So some places you'll find a time really hard to get, but the jumping can be a little bit easier. Sometimes you'll find the jumping is okay, the time is okay, but the show jumping is particularly difficult. And then all of these venues build up a reputation of somewhere we think, okay, well, that's what that type of venue is. Here, I would say it's absolutely going to be a test of time. You know, if you look at the starting score of some of the people that you're talking about, I mean, you can go back to Trading Aces in 2014. 27.6 was what Boyd started on, finished on a 34. And as you go through all of those winners, you'll pretty much see an ad or a big ad for a lot of them. To give you an example, what I mean here is, as we go to Carolina soon, you'll see that the winner very often finishes under dressage score. So of course, Carolina is a place where the time is not necessarily easy, but the winner of it will often be someone who can finish under dressage score, who can jump clear and stay inside the time. Whereas here, you tend to see the winner every single time is adding. So Marilyn Little, RF Scandalous in 2018, started on a 25.6, finished on a 36. Last year, Selena O'Hanlon started on a 26.8, finished on a 30.8. Harbour Pilot started on a 29.4 in 2017, finished on a 40.2. So the competition, this particular competition, is going to have some good dressage scores, going to have some low dressage scores, but it's not really, I would suggest, going to be as indicative of who goes on to win as probably that key phase in the middle.
I'm going to call you out on that one, Dem, because in the last 6 years, the four-star short winner has always been first or second after dressage.
Yeah, that's because everyone across the whole field is adding. And
yeah, but that's what I mean, is that if you're looking for your winner out of the first two after dressage, that is where your winner will come from, most likely.
Okay, for the crack, I'll put on a bet with you that it won't be from the first or second after dressage, if you're so sure.
I'll take you, no, do you know what? Let's go a bit more bold than that. Let's open it up. The winner will come from outside of the top three after dressage.
The winner will come from outside of the top three after dressage.
And that you're saying that. I'm saying the winner will be inside the top three after dressage.
We can do this offline, but
need to be part of our betting situation.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But this is the kind of thing that we obsess over, where can we use the data, can we use what we know about the events, what we've seen in the past events, to try and see, is there clues here? And one of the clues I would suggest is that cross-country time and your ability to be quick generally or not add show jumping faults is going to be critical this weekend.
The advanced in particular is really tough to get the time at Red Hills, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's, you know, it's kind of the lay of Red Hills. It's, you know, I think they've done a good job in recent years, especially of opening up the tracks on the course and improving the footing. And it's a great, interesting, beautiful track, but it's also tight. I mean, there are trees, there's, you know, areas where you're not going to be able to make up time. So yeah, I think I can't wait to see how much is being wagered on this. But yeah,
I think big we bets, guys. Big bets.
They're literally like $5 or something. I'm not a big spender. I would say, actually, you mentioned Max, Jenny Branigan, and Bliss. Jenny has really good form actually at Red Hills in the past. She has won, what did she win last year?
I can help you out. She has the best finishing score at the venue across all the levels. Finished on a 22.7 with hopscotch in the open preliminary last year.
Oh, okay. Yeah. she seems to, you know, there's some competitions that suit people really well. And she's quite a fast cross country rider, which does help her. And she, you know, this obviously, I think some of these horses she's taking this year will probably have a canter around that. This is sort of the beginning of their season, where others she can be quite fast on that, you know, that are a bit more established at the level. But there's a lot of, you know, like Rob was saying, it's a lot of atmosphere, lots of gallop lanes that a lot of horses maybe haven't seen before, especially the younger ones.
It's good. It's good at this time of the season to start actually exposing them to that kind of environment as well, as they build up to their sort of big spring targets. It's, you know, you'll see a few of them that are pretty fresh and happy to be out, but actually it's good practice for them when they get to the likes of Kentucky, Jersey Fresh as well, that they actually have already seen those sorts of tracks and atmospheres.
Right.
Okay, other ones. Will Coleman and Off the Record are back in the advanced. We'll come on to the advanced in a second. Let's pick up a few more four-star horses for you to watch. You have got, as we've said, three of the past winners. You will have the likes of Clayton Fredericks, Effie Stormtrooper. Clayton had some really good form last year and will no doubt be looking to continue that this spring. Derm, anybody from your perspective that you want to pick out?
I'd be nervous about picking out anyone here. I think, as you say, there's some top horses. You know how I like to focus on quite random little pieces of information? Nobody else from it, unless the kind of little trivia nerds. I tell you what, if anyone's talking about Red Hills this weekend, just drop this in and make you sound great. What I was looking at there was, what riders have been to this venue the most? Like, how many times have they competed here, just to see if there was anyone or anything of interest? Because I saw that Jenny Brannigan was actually bringing six horses. Now, she's been here 16 times, which is in the top, or sorry, has 16 runs at the venue, I should say, which is in the top. She's number 7 of 8 on my list. But 16 plus 6, that brings her to 22, which is equal with Boyd Martin, who's on 22. Lauren Nicholson is actually on top at the moment on 23, but neither Lauren nor Boyd have an entry. So a person in number third.
Lauren's got in the 4-star.
Oh, no, sorry. I looked up how many entries she has. What's Lauren got here?
She's got Paramount Importance, Landmarks, Monte Carlo, and Vermiculus, but not the 4-star.
Lauren Nicholson now, rather than Lauren Kiefer.
Right, but she's Kiefer. In this one, she's Kiefer. It's all confusing. These people want to get married.
Oh my God, is that Lauren Kiefer? Because I spent ages looking up Lauren Nicholson. Yeah. I was like, who is Lauren Nicholson with all these runs?
Yes.
He was like, oh my God, where did she come from?
She got married just after Thanksgiving to an Irishman. There you go.
I hate it when people wreck databases. I see Piggy French has just done it on this side of the world. She's become Piggy March.
Yeah.
Okay, well then Kiefer is probably going to stay in front. I think that's how that's going
to
work.
Yeah, so, another three. To be honest, though, Dem, you're a big Lauren Kiefer fan as well, because you have put her up, and it's one listeners for you to watch out for. She has got a real string coming together this year and could challenge for a podium place in the FEI World Rankings.
I think I put her as number one in the FEI World Rankings.
You did put her as
number one. Only the third woman this decade to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's going to do it by November, December. Fingers crossed for Lauren Nicholson.
I thought D was on top of it. I thought he was just really ahead of us all and has gotten used to calling her Lauren Nicholson. And I'm like, wow, he's really, you know, he's made the transition.
No, I've really been caught out by the name change here. But anyway, Lauren Nicholson, Lauren Kiefer, looks like she's going to be the person, you know, the Red Hills queen in terms of runs. And Caroline Martin is going to join her, I think. She has 7 runners here this weekend. So she's gone from 21 to 28. So they're both going to be up there at the very top. When we talk about certain riders, like in certain venues, there too, that I would be keeping an eye out for this weekend, the other way around here.
Yeah, I actually think that Caroline Martin's got a really nice horse, Islandwood Captain Jack, that I will be looking out for this weekend. Just other ones from the Canadian perspective to look out for. Carl Slezak rides his Pan American Games horse, Fernhill Wishes, that should be one for you to watch as well. And Jess Phoenix has 5 entered in the 4-star short. So she's got a really, really good number lining up. In the advanced, I want to actually say the one you need to be watching out for, listeners, Admittedly, he is on the comeback trail because we didn't see a lot of him in the second half of last season internationally. And that would be Will Coleman's off the record, who Will's heart was a little bit broken at Tattersalls last year when he was in the lead in the four-star long in the show jumping and had a really unlucky pole down. So he dropped to third. But the horse has won at four-star short level, is very experienced, has, I think he won the Nations Cup actually, at Great Meadow a couple of years ago in 2018.
He did, as a young horse. Yep, he did.
This is a serious horse, Max, that actually can be really on the comeback trail up to the top level this year.
Yeah, it's a really good horse. I know Will was really disappointed in not winning at Tattersalls last year, but the horse has come back and it's actually been put on the U.S. high performance list. It is just a really cool horse. I know he's really happy to have it back going again.
Hasn't been out of the top 10 in something like his last 11 international runs, and has made the time in a lot of them as well. He's a fast horse, Derm, and I think that's going to be really important in the advanced at Red Hills if Will does put his foot down on the accelerator.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that 1% of people over the last 5 or 6 seasons have made the time here in this class, so if you've got speed in that class, maybe that'll be the person who gets me my bet, Nicole. I think it is going
maybe.
To be. Yeah.
I think we're going to have to take the betting situation off air, Dom.
Otherwise, sorry. Yeah, I'm not going to mention it again. I just, how much I love winning money from you.
He loves it, listeners, because I'm really reluctant. And then every so often I get really sort of confident. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to bet £10 or $10. And then he takes my money. Okay, guys, it has been an absolute pleasure. We have got some seriously nice horses out and about this week. So, listeners, we hope that we've given you a few ones to keep an eye out for and ones to watch for the start of the season, because it is well and truly upon us now. And we have got lots more coming up for you on the USEA official podcast. Our next episode, which will be out in a couple of weeks' time, is going to be all about planning your season. So if you're not sure where to start, if you need a few ideas, if you need a few tips and tricks, then that is going to be the episode for you. We have got loads coming up for you over the next few months as well. But the most important thing is we would like to hear from you. So get in touch with us at US Eventing on social media or email us at podcast@useventing.com and send in your suggestions. But thank you for listening. Rob, Max, Derm, thank you all for joining us. Exciting weekend coming up.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
Thank you for having us.
Max, I hope your invitational goes well.
Thank you. Me too. There's a live stream too. You guys, if you want to, you can watch it too. So
where's the live stream link if anybody wants to log in and watch?
I'll send you the website address, and then there'll be a link on that. It's EQTV. It's the same group that the Aiken Showcase.
Perfect. There you go, listeners. Yeah. You can watch it. If you need a little bit of an eventing fix midweek, pre-Red Hills, that is the live stream for you. Derm, a pleasure as always.
Goodbye, Nicole.
Goodbye. Thank you, listeners. We'll be back very soon with another episode of the USEA official podcast. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.